Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Shoot me some info. Go ahead.
All right. Will do. Hey, here's some info. Netflix lost 1 million subscribers. I don't know if you heard about that. The New York Post. Netflix lost, nearly 1 million subscribers in the most recent quarter. So what is that? That's like $10, $11 a pop times 1 million. That's a lot of money. The latest evidence that the streaming giant is getting picked apart by rivals and is running out of room for growth overseas. Still, that was better than the 2 million subscribers that Netflix lost, that it had predicted that it would lose. The Los Gatos, California-based streaming service said it expects to return to growth in the current quarter. They cited part of the reason for that is the hit show Stranger Things, season 4. Cyrus, you're probably more of a Stranger Things guy than I am. I mean, I'm not at all. I've never seen it. But I saw something somewhere that said that the main character is gay. Did I read that right? Or am I missing something?
They are pushing that. Yeah, well, it's Netflix. Every single Netflix show has a gay character, whether they have to crowbar it in there or not.
Yeah.
And
they do crowbar it.
They do.
What I'm wondering is, just, you know, putting two and two together, I wonder if that might be why they're losing subscribers hand over fist.
It does get old. My kids make a joke about it. Like, if we're watching another show, say a Disney show, and they're crowbarring that agenda in there too, they'll be like, oh, I thought this was Disney, not Netflix.
Netflix, I guess I'm somewhat gleeful. Netflix shares have fallen 67%. This year. Now they're blaming it on the worries about future growth. I couldn't help but wonder if it might be because of all the wokeism that they're jamming down people's throats. Last quarter, Netflix shocked the media world when it lost 200,000 subscribers in the first quarter. So, yeah, I mean, all is not well there. And I wonder if maybe in the ecosystem of streaming platforms and Darwinian evolution taking hold here, I wonder if this may have the net effect. Haha, get it? If it might have the net effect of just reshaping Netflix's approach to programming so that it doesn't wind up destroying itself because people don't want to see the stuff that's constantly jamming that stuff in their faces.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. And then another part is they will have, this is common with Netflix, they'll have 3 seasons of a show and it'll end on a cliffhanger and then they cancel the show. And that's getting old. The cliffhanger season ender is really old. I'm pretty tired of it. Because a cliffhanger is not what brings us back to a show when it comes back a year later. It's the characters and it's the story. It's not the cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm.
So I wish that people would get what the audience wants. What I want in a show is good characters. That's what I'm going to follow.
Yeah.
So
speaking of which, this doesn't directly tie into that, but I guess I moved on from that topic. That's how little interest I have in the success or failure of Netflix. But I did get a note from one of our awesome listeners, Shane. He says, Patrick, I started to watch the movie Old Henry tonight. I have a feeling there's some confusion here. The only option, let's see, his email's sort of going off the edge here. The only option that I came up with in my search results was a single movie, a Western. And he mentioned a few things about the movie that I won't mention only because I don't want to ruin it for anybody. He says, this is a bit shocking for the kids. Maybe there's another Old Henry out there. So I responded to Shane this morning and I said, no, actually, that was the one I had in mind. It's not something, I don't remember if we talked about this, but it's not something for children. It's a Western movie. And so you can expect that kind of violence, you know, that was prevalent in those days. So it's historically accurate. But I watched it, as I told Shane, with 2 of my teenage grandsons. They absolutely loved it. They went through the roof for this movie. So, that's the one. But just maybe Shane's question is a good reminder that maybe I should have said, it's not a movie to watch with your children, but nonetheless, there are no immoral scenes. There's no, you know, nothing in the movie that your children will see or hear. Not even any bad words that I remember. Not even one, unless they were in there. I just didn't notice it. It's just a very interesting and compelling story. So I reiterate my recommendation, but it's good that Shane brought this up so that, you know, don't sit down and watch it with a six-year-old. That wouldn't be a good thing. But kids, let's say 12, 13 and up, I think would be fine with it.
Well, cool off, Pilgrim.
888-914-9149. Back to the phones. Let's go now to Karen in Visalia. Oh, Karen, I'm sorry. I got so distracted, I didn't even remember I was supposed to come back to you. Forgive me.
No problem. I just love everything you say.
Oh, well, thank you. And as I recall,
I'm enjoying myself.
Okay. I remember now, you had asked about, can spirits get stuck on Earth after they die? We talked just briefly about that. And then you said something really ominous about your sister being, how did you say it, tormented by your father?
Yes, by my blood father. Yes, he was even some demonic. Let me say one thing, too. She's been on a tour with you about 4 years, 5 years ago to Rome, and she's also been to Medjugorje. We both are very strong Catholics, and I feel that some of the attacks that she's receiving, or especially with feeling his presence around her, and she mentioned to me yesterday that she felt that he was stuck. And I wanted to ask you. I thought right off the bat, I'll ask Patrick, what's this all about?
Well, it could be true. There is, in fact, a book on the topic. It's called Hungry Souls, and it's a fairly recent book. You might want to get it for her. And it's about souls in purgatory and how God permits them from time to time to manifest to us in ways that can seem mysterious and even spooky. But they're permitted to do this as a way to ask us to pray for them. So we pray for the souls in purgatory through our prayers, rosaries. You can have a mass celebrated or many masses celebrated. So my advice would be, in this case, if that's her intuition, that this may be some sort of a nudge from the other side, her father asking for prayer, then I would say ask her to ask a priest to celebrate one or more masses for the repose of the soul of her father, and pray the rosary every day for the repose of his soul. Maybe she could start a 30-day rosary novena for the repose of his soul. And then, maybe once that goes by, then she could, you know, sort of gauge, does she still feel this presence? Does she still feel this feeling? It could be just in her imagination. Don't forget, that's always possible. But even if it is in her imagination, it doesn't mean that her father may not need, or your father may not need prayer. So I would try that. And she may find that it will go away entirely.
I understand. Just before his death, there was a very demonic situation that happened.
So what do you mean by that?
It could also... he was videotaped, and he's 92, 93 when this happened, on an iPad that was left for her after he had died, on his table, kitchen table, that ripped my mother apart. In other words, they were divorced for, 80s, I'm sorry, about when she was 22, 23, they got divorced. So it's that long, and he was 92 when he died, that he has been aggravated, that he's the one who left. He's her name, but he just ripped my mother apart, and just in a demonic way, very ugly, and it was left as a videotape on the iPod.
Oh, I see. So he left a message that he recorded for her saying terrible things. Is that what you mean?
Yes, and knowing that she would be in the house to clean up the house and take care of stuff, and it was already set up. Now, he personally didn't do it, but he did talk on the video.
So do you think that he orchestrated that? He sat down, he pressed record, and he did this message, or did somebody have him do that for some reason?
I think somebody else had him.
Well, I'm not sure what to say about that. Some people can do really heinous things out of revenge or for some other spiteful reason. But since you'll never really know if he's passed on, my advice would be continue to pray for him maybe have a Catholic priest come to that house and bless it with holy water, pray prayers of deliverance. If there are any evil entities, any demonic spirits that are roaming around there, that will help to get them out, give them the boot. And I'm not from Canada, by the way, but I would do that. So maybe there can be some purification that takes place. And if there are any things in his belongings that are odd or occultic or something, I would get rid of those as well. I don't know if there are, but anything you can do to kind of clean things up, any negative spiritual residue that might be present in something bad, for example, I would try to do that. But definitely pray for him and ask the Lord to have mercy on his soul. And if the devil is lurking about, ask the Lord to banish him from your precincts. That's what I would do, Karen. Thank you. And again, thank you so much for being a faithful listener of the program. Let's go now to Gina in Foxborough, Massachusetts. Good morning, Gina.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm calling because I have a question about this prophecy from Isaiah where it reads, "Therefore the Lord himself will give you a sign. Behold, a virgin shall conceive and bear a son, mm-hmm. and shall call his name Emmanuel." And that, to me, refers to the birth of Christ. I'm correct, right?
It does. It's the classic messianic prophecy, and the king was sort of playing some games here because he was saying that, well, you know, the Lord doesn't need to show me a sign. I can mm-hmm. believe on my own. So he was playing a bit of a game there. But the sign that was foretold would be that, and the word that's used there is Alma. That's the Hebrew word, and it is it means a young woman. It doesn't mean a virgin per se. But it certainly could mean a virgin, and in this context, it does mean a virgin. But the reason that this is important is because the woman who gives birth to this son, it wouldn't be a miracle if it were just a married woman. So if, you know, she's a married woman and she pops out a baby, what's the big deal? That's not a sign. That's not a miracle. But the fact that this Alma, this young maiden, this young woman, rather, has a child, the miraculous part of it is the fact that she's a virgin. So it's inferred in that context. It's not explicitly stated.
Okay, that really helps. The reason I asked is because I was listening to a radio show where they talked about this prophecy, and they said the prophecy came true back then with that king, with, you know, where he was talking to that king, and that person was, they said all women who weren't married were called virgins back then, and that prophecy came true back then. Some woman bore a son, and it fulfilled the prophecy. And I thought that kind of ruined everything I had ever thought about it. Have you ever heard of that?
Well, I don't know what the motive would be to hold that view. I don't hold that view at all, but the reason I don't think it works is because in order for this to be a sign that is miraculous, the woman would have to be a virgin. So when it says in verse 14, and by the way, we're in Isaiah chapter 7, "Therefore the Lord himself will give you a sign. Behold, the virgin," and that's where the word Alma appears, "shall conceive and bear a son and shall call his name Emmanuel." Yeah. So let's say that 1,000,001 women conceived sons, as 1,000,001 women did, and named him Emmanuel or whatever name, there's nothing miraculous about that. So that in itself is not a sign. So the only way in which this makes sense in context is that Alma is translated, or the meaning of Alma in this passage is a virgin. If a woman who is a virgin suddenly now has a baby and there was no human father involved, that is a miracle. That is a sign.
Absolutely.
And that, of course, is what happened with Jesus.
This, believe it or not, I don't remember who it was because it was a time I don't always listen, and it was on Relevant Radio. So I was really, maybe I misunderstood or missed something, but they didn't correct it after and say, you know, this was a miraculous prophecy. They said it just took place already back then, and it seemed to imply that it wasn't referring to Christ and Mary.
Well, you and I know that this is one of those classical prophecies about Jesus. But see, I didn't hear what was said, and I don't know who said it, so I don't want to presume to correct something somebody else said that I didn't hear. But for you and
no,
for me,
especially if I didn't misunderstand, especially if I didn't. If I didn't hear it correctly or I misunderstood, but I've wanted to call you about this for weeks. I think it's months now. So I really thank you for,
you're most welcome. You're most welcome. One thought is there are some really good commentaries on the part of the church fathers in what's called the Catena Aria. That comments on the Gospels. St. Thomas Aquinas compiled every line of the four Gospels, and he sort of interpolated comments from the church fathers on those particular texts. Now, this, of course, is in Isaiah, so it's in the Old Testament. But I wouldn't be surprised if we were to consult the Catena Aria that in Luke chapter 1, where this actually happens, so the angel Gabriel telling Mary, you are going to conceive and bear a child. She says, how can this be, for I do not know man. She was betrothed. She was in the first phase of her marriage, but she was not living with her husband under the same roof yet. And this, her reaction strongly suggests that she had taken a vow of perpetual virginity. Otherwise, her reaction doesn't really make any sense. But my point is, I would not be at all surprised if some of the church fathers equate Luke chapter 1 and the Annunciation with Isaiah chapter 7, so that we could see there, they're making the connection between the Alma in Isaiah 7:14 and the Alma, the Blessed Virgin Mary, in Luke chapter 1. But I would need to go back and pull those books off the shelf and check them. But if I remember to do that, Gina, I'll try to report back what I find out.
That sounds fantastic. I thank you for your help.
Thank you, Gina. Thanks for listening. I appreciate it. Yeah, so many great programs here on Relevant Radio. They're all great, each in their own way, and they all do different things. So by no means do I want to suggest that, you know, we don't have wonderful commentary on the other programs. Do listen to them. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Chicago and talk to Stephanie. Hi, Stephanie.
Hi, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
So yesterday, my daughter, I let her go on a play date with another girl. My daughter's 8. The other girl is 8. And when I went to pick her up, the dad said that his daughter is now into witchcraft. Mm-hmm. And so I was shocked and I didn't say anything. I just grabbed my daughter and we left, and I told my daughter why it was bad. But now I'm wondering, should I allow my daughter to continue a friendship with this girl?
No. No. I would never say, are you out of your mind? I would never say that. No, of course not. 1 Corinthians, write this down. Ready? You ready for this? 1 Corinthians. Okay, 1 Corinthians 15:33. Everybody, let's say it together. Do not be deceived. Bad company ruins good morals. Bad, and I think that's where the band got the name for the band. Bad company ruins good morals. And it's short and sweet, but it says everything. If your daughter is hanging around with a girl who's practicing witchcraft, that is bad company. And it will ruin her in certain ways. And obviously you don't want that. So
okay.
I would forbid her to hang out with a girl who's practicing witchcraft. How old is your daughter again?
She's 8 years old.
Yeah, please. Oh my gosh. Run, don't walk away from that situation.
Do I need to explain to them why we're not going to be friends anymore?
Well, who's them? Is it her parents?
It's her parents, and she's in gymnastics. The girl, both our daughters are in gymnastics together, so they see each other every day.
Does the mom know that her daughter is saying that she practices witchcraft?
Both parents know.
Okay, then if it were me, that's just me. If I had to talk to them at the next dance recital or the next gymnastics thing, I would say, are you out of your mind? You're letting your daughter practice witchcraft? Do you realize how extremely dangerous and damaging this is? Are you crazy? What is wrong with you? Why would you do that? And I probably would say it just like that. You know, I'd like to say it far enough away that the guy wouldn't take a punch at me. But, you know, you don't have any obligation to change their practices. But maybe if you if you just said something like that, like, are you out of your mind letting a child practice witchcraft? And there's no way my kid's going to play with your kid if that's what's going on under your roof. And I hope and pray that you will come to your senses and stop doing that. Because you're letting the devil into your home. You're setting up an outpost for him in your home. So no, my daughter will not be coming over to play with your daughter. Sorry. That might shake them up enough that they might stop and say, well, maybe she's got a point. I don't know if they'd say that to you. Maybe they get angry and indignant. But,
yeah.
You know, I wouldn't be surprised if your words were ringing in their ears. Did you see, Stephanie? I got to tell you, this is not the same thing, but in a way it kind of reminds me of that. On Twitter, there's a video going around. I saw it day before yesterday of an elderly Catholic nun in Italy. She's just walking on this road in Italy, and she sees two women kissing, and they're doing like a photo shoot. Okay? They're lip locked. She comes up to, you just see it start when she's like right there. She comes up to them and she just pushes them, like one hand on each of their shoulders. She just pushes them and they sort of, you know, pull back from each other. And she says, this is all in Italian, and so there's a subtitle. Like, what are you doing? Why are you doing this? Stop doing this. This is from the devil. This is the devil doing this. You shouldn't do this. And these girls are smirking at the camera like, ah, isn't that funny? But this nun, she really did a good service. I'm so glad that was captured on cell phone video so that we could see it. She didn't care what other people might think. She just went right in there and said, stop it. This is wrong. And this is demonic. And you really should look for that. Look for Italian nun women kissing and you'll find it. It's out there. So maybe be like that nun. I'm not saying push anybody. I'm not saying be physical. She's just a little thing. There's no way she could have hurt these two women. But her chutzpah, as they say, was admirable. And her courage and her willingness, she didn't care what anyone thought. She was going to tell it like it is. And I wonder if maybe one or both of those women might have a conversion experience because of what that nun had the courage to do.
Yeah.
Check it out.
I've
got to run, Stephanie. I'm sorry. Yeah, look at what that nun did. That may give you some pointers about how you might go about it. I'll be right back. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. I have an email here from David, who is listening in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Just came in a minute ago. He says, good morning, Patrick. How can we support a church that is bending over backwards to show support to the multiple pro-abortion Catholic politicians in the United States, such as the Pope shaking hands and allowing Holy Communion for Nancy Pelosi? Well, you do it the old-fashioned way, David. There's really only one way to do it. If you trust in Jesus and you believe that the Catholic Church is the church he established, and I firmly do, and things happen in the church that are scandalous, shocking, discouraging, demoralizing, you just roll with it, David. That's what you do. Because you don't really have another choice. Well, you do. Your other choice is to say, all right, Jesus lied, or he didn't know what he was talking about. And that, to me, is not an option that I will accept. I will accept, David, the reality that, as we see in the Gospels, and the apostles were on the Sea of Galilee in the storm, and the boat they were on appeared about to go under, and they would all die. And Jesus was asleep in the middle of this raging storm. How he could be sleeping, I do not know. But he was sleeping in the middle of this terrible storm, thunder and lightning and waves and all of the above. And the apostles wake him up and they say, Lord, do you not care that we're about to die here? And Jesus rises and he says, why did you doubt, you of little faith? And he calms the storm. Just like that. Just like that. That's my game plan. I'm not saying this to be pushy or rude or anything, David. I'm really not. And I understand why you have this question. I understand that many people are asking the same kind of question. Why does Nancy Pelosi, on the one hand, her archbishop tells her, don't go to communion. You're not supposed to go to communion. And he's right to do so. And then she goes to the Vatican and she, you know, gets communion. Smug and smugger, if you ask me, in the case of Nancy Pelosi. Why is that happening? I don't know, and I'm here to say it shouldn't happen, but the only way through this, if you ask me, David, is there may be times when it seems like Jesus is asleep, but he's still in charge, and he's permitting his church to go through some rough water. It's not the first time. It won't be the last time. It's just that you and I are on board here and now. So for us, it seems like this ship is going under. Lord, don't you care? And the Lord is saying the same thing to you, David, as he's saying to me that he said to the apostles, why did you doubt, O you of little faith? So that's my heartfelt, sincere, honest answer. It's not glib. This is really and truly how I personally am approaching these interesting times in which we live. I trust you, Jesus. I trust you. I don't know what the game plan is, and I don't know if in your wisdom what the reasons are that you permit the church to go through terrible persecutions in the early church and so many of your people being slaughtered. I don't know why you allow certain Christological heresies and other heresies to arise and do tremendous damage to the church, sometimes taking centuries to overcome those problems. I don't know why you allowed the Protestant Reformation to happen. Lord, why did you let that happen to your church? This terrible, grievous wound and the heresies that poured forth from this rebellion against your church. Lord, why did you allow that? I don't know, but I trust in you. Even though it seems at times, Lord, that you're asleep. So that I'll leave it at that, David. That's my heartfelt response to your question. I really do believe that. And I think that's the only sound Catholic way to approach whatever problems you may see. Jesus, I trust in you. And of course, pray for all involved. Let's pray for each other. Let's pray for all involved, from the Pope all the way down to little old you and me, that God will bless us and help us and protect us. We certainly need it. But I don't see any other viable option other than that. Stay the course. Trust in Jesus. Come what may. Let's go to Rachel in Chicago. Hi, Rachel.
Hi, Patrick.
Hi.
Yes, so I was calling because of the mom who called about her daughter, and now the friend is practicing witchcraft. So
oh, yeah, the 8-year-old witch.
Yes. I just wanted to completely affirm what you were saying and the advice you gave from my own personal experience. I'm 25 now, but when I was in elementary school, there were some older girls at recess that would call themselves Wicca, that would, mm-hmm. you know, play all these things. And in my innocence, I didn't realize it was real. But thankfully, by the grace of God, my parents, in their wisdom, and I had an open relationship with them to tell them what was going on, immediately you started telling me, hey, do not hang out with them. You know, you need to stay away. But unfortunately for me, I did start having nightmares. I had spiritual attacks. And, mm-hmm. you know, to this day with my spiritual director, these are things that I've kind of reflected on and talked about. But 100% to that mom out there, make sure your daughter kind of stays away from her. And she may not fully understand at the time, but you will definitely be saving her soul with that.
Indeed. You couldn't have said it better. And you know what I'm hearing from what you're saying is your parents have a duty to defend you as a child. They have a duty to stand between you and the wolf, to stand between you and whatever's coming at you. They have a duty to put themselves in between the two of you and protect you at all costs. And that's what your parents did. And I'm so glad to hear that it worked out well for you. But isn't it interesting that even the little, you know, just the little edges around which you happen to touch upon, that even that left a kind of residue? That's what you're saying, right? That even that had a kind of negative, nefarious effect on you, even though it might have been mild, right?
Yes, and to my memory, unfortunately, kind of fails me as to, you know, how much I did, you know, in my innocence, again, think I was playing with them at that point. But what I do remember very vividly are the spiritual attacks and just the demonic images. And as a young child, you know, my parents were wonderful. They did protect us from a number of different things, didn't let us be exposed to things that they knew would harm our spirits. So it couldn't have come from anything but that. Yes.
God bless them. Have you talked about this with your mom and dad in the years since then? Have you thanked them for what they did?
You know, I definitely should. They are honestly the best parents and pray for me daily and have just kept my faith alive over the years. But this was something, weirdly enough, that had come up over the years where my dad particularly would kind of bring it up and be like, yeah, do you remember that time when, you know, those girls were doing that? It's so crazy and scary and things like that. So,
yeah. Yeah. Well, it sounds like you have wonderful parents and I'm happy for you. Maybe what you're saying is a great reminder to not only parents, but also young people that even if you just start dabbling in these things, that's all it takes. It doesn't take much to start infecting you and causing serious problems that could last a long time. So don't even start.
Definitely.
Yeah. Well, good for you, Rachel. Thank you for sharing on that.
Thank you, Patrick.
You're welcome. Good talking to you. I love Cyrus. I love hearing from the young people, you know, the 20-something young women and men who call in. I'm glad to know they're listening. Sometimes I think that maybe the listeners for the Patrick Madrid Show tend to be older, but I don't think so anymore. I think we're hearing from a lot of young people, college-age people, and even younger than that, which is a good sign.
It's a great sign. Yeah, it makes me think about my own childhood and the kids that I chose not to hang out with. And I looked at them and what they were doing. It wasn't witchcraft, but it was they were up to no good. You know, then I saw these other kids that you know, they had families and they just seemed smarter. And so I was always drawn to smarter people than myself, which isn't hard to find.
But, I don't believe that. You're a very smart guy.
Well, that's probably the smartest thing I ever did. And so then with my own kids, I try to tell them the same things. Like, don't always hang out with the kid that's the most popular. Go find the smart kids. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that you're going to make these lasting relationships with.
Yeah.
So not witchcraft. It's not directly related to what they're saying, but it's the same. It's you can tell when the kids are up to no good, and then it's a fine line. Do I let my kids hang out with them in hopes that they make that other kid a better person? Because what if the parents of my friends saw me and they were like, no way are you hanging out with. with that kid. And fortunately they didn't. They ended up, they opened their doors and they treated me well. And I saw what, you know, a good father looks like. And
right.
So it's really a fine line. It's hard, but when you're messing with witchcraft, there's a hard line there. You're not messing with that, but I don't know.
That's a good point. Yeah. So you benefited as the feral kid, as you refer to yourself.
Right.
You benefited from wholesome, good, intact families who opened their doors to you and allowed you to be present, you know, as a friend and a kid that they liked. And you were at the kitchen table and seeing how mom and dad interacted and
Without
what
a
healthy family looked like.
Without a doubt. Yeah. And that's awesome. And that's the only place I saw it. So if they would have turned me away, I who knows where I'd be.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But, I want to share. That's a good point, Cyrus. And so I maybe what I should do is balance what you just said with what I said a moment ago, and that is, you know, bad company ruins good morals, and that's 1 Corinthians 15:33. There is a line over which if there's somebody who wants to be friends with one of your kids, and now I'm talking about kids, not like young adults, because when they get older, I mean, you still have to give them advice, but when they get older or old enough, you can't force them, you know, you can't see this person anymore. You can strongly encourage it, but you can't force it. But when they're kids, you can enforce that. You're not going to that kid's house. You're not going to go over there to hang out. So I want to maybe do a balancing act between what you're saying, and that is, what if those parents had said that about you? He's not coming into this house, not that kid. And so how good it is that they had that open door policy for you and they welcomed you in. But I think the dividing line is, you are not practicing witchcraft. I hope.
No, I
know you weren't. I know you weren't. You were not robbing liquor stores. You were not a pyromaniac.
Right.
You were not shooting heroin in the back alley. So they could tell, okay, this kid's a little rough around the edges. Tell me if I'm wrong. Mm. He's a little rough around the edges, maybe from the wrong side of the tracks, but he's at heart, he's a good kid, and we're happy to have him here. That's what I'm assuming was going on.
Yeah, and you're right. But still, I mean, I'm wearing the same, you know, the same clothes day after day.
Yeah.
Who knows, the last time I showered, I was probably some smelly, I'm sure I was some smelly kid. I just imagine what these parents must have thought of me.
They probably thought, you know, he's a good kid and no one's really looking after him. So why don't you come have dinner with us?
And we'll, God bless him for that.
Yeah.
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 And so we try to do that with, there's a little friend in our family circle, mm-hmm. That we've just taken in, especially during the pandemic, and she was just always at our house, and we started calling our you know, our third daughter, and I think we made a, you know, that it was nice to pay that forward and do that, do, yeah, something nice for someone else.
So it was like the Waltons. They had enough room at the table for skinny Cyrus Simcoe to sit there and have
that's right,
fried chicken and mashed potatoes.
Isn't that nice?
Yeah, that is, yeah, nice of them to do that, and you have benefited greatly for that, from that. So we all owe that family, or whatever families they were, we owe them a debt of gratitude that you turned out as well as you did, Cyrus, which is pretty darn well. And now it's, you're paying it forward to your kids. All right, so let's take a break, and when we come back, I'm going to share with you a dream, a vision that St. John Bosco had about how young people go to hell. Are you ready for this? We'll see. I'll tell you about that right after this quick timeout. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Keeping it relevant. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. The Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Okay, back to it. Let's go to John in Dodgeville, Wisconsin. Hi, John.
I just would like to thank you for tuning me into the Waltons. I'm about your age, and I only saw one episode for a school assignment when I was growing up. I just didn't have much interest in it. And I was busy in sports, and we have something called Positive TV, and they ran it every day at 11 o'clock in the morning for about 6 months. And I started at the beginning and went all the way to the last episode, and I just loved the character development later on. I hate to say this because people will be offended, but actually John Boy was my least favorite character on that show. I really took to the...
they were really strong characters.
I really took to that second daughter because old John Boy knew just what he wanted to do, and so did Mary Ellen, wanted to be a nurse, and she was a senior in high school and didn't know what to do or where to go, and she went on dates but never really... seemed to find the right guy, and her boyfriend got kind of down in the dumps, and he joined the Army and got killed in a training incident. And I guess myself, I was a lot more like growing up, a lot like that youngest boy. He's always tinkering in the shop and fixing the old car. And
Jim Bob.
And I grew up in, Dodge County, Wisconsin, and it's kind of a mix of small towns and farms. And our community was, although in the 60s and 70s, was very much like Walton's Malton. We had the church and the little store and some of the eccentric neighbors that we got to be friends with and helped out, and they helped us. And I always feel I have a lot more in common with people from that era than from teenagers growing up now.
What's going on? I was asleep. What's everybody doing?
Hey, John. Patrick.
You remember that.
Patrick has a interview on, we have it on the show page, and you can find it on YouTube, with, what's her name, Patrick? From the Waltons?
Mary McDonough. She's the actress who played that character. That was Erin on the show, John. And Mary McDonough is the actress who played her. And go ahead, Cyrus, but that's who Cyrus is referring to.
Yeah, and I'll find that and I'll put it on the Twitters in just a second. Make that easy for you, John.
Great idea. Yeah, John, I think you'll find it very interesting. So it was a lengthy discussion. It was a phone call discussion that I had with her that lasted, I don't know, probably close to an hour. And we talked all kinds of things about the Waltons and background details and things. It was very informative. And so we did play a few snippets on the show just for people like you who enjoy the Waltons. But I'm really happy to know that even though you didn't see it back in the day, back in the 70s, that looking at it now, that you really enjoyed it. That makes me happy.
What's interesting to me is old Grandpa Walton and Ellen Corby, they show up in some of these older movies on occasion.
True. Yeah, true. They were, well, you know, Will Gear, the actor who played Grandpa, he was blacklisted because he was, his personal life was not tidy, we can put it that way. And he also was known for his leftist politics. And during the McCarthy era, when people were being blacklisted for suspicion of being communists, he got caught up in that. And so he basically didn't have any work for a long time. So he started doing theater work and whatnot. And eventually, when he was cast as Grandpa Walton, that was like a big return for him because he had been out of out of movies in the media for probably better part of 20 years because he was blacklisted. So that was kind of a statement that he, as Grandpa, was cast in the Waltons. And that was his last hurrah because he died, you know, 5 or 6 seasons into it. But I'm glad you liked it. I really am, John. And one of these days, I would love to, I don't know if I'd call it a pilgrimage, but one of these days I'd love to get a bus full of like-minded people and go to Schuyler, Virginia, which is the real town where the fictional Walton's Mountain is patterned after. The man who wrote the Waltons and whom the John Boy character is portraying, he grew up in that town. And so Ike Godsey's store and, you know, the actual house that their name wasn't the Waltons, but the house where the family lived and all of those, many of those things are still there. So if ever you find yourself in about an hour, what would that be? Kind of an hour northeast, a little bit less of Lynchburg, Virginia, you will find the little town of Schuyler, and they're geared for people who want to go there and find out more about the Waltons. Thank you, John. Appreciate it. 888-914-9149. How about Ann now in Waukesha, Wisconsin? Good morning, Ann.
Good morning. How are you, Patrick?
Doing
Hello?
Well, thank you. Welcome aboard. Yes.
Thank you. So my question for you is, and I thought of calling you for several days now, I have 2 grandchildren mm-hmm. who have declared that they are transgender. And they're older teens, one is actually in his 20s, and they say there's nothing in the Bible against being transgender. What would you tell them? And
I see them as they were born, the gender that they were born with. Mm-hmm. But I love them, and I love them. The one I will actually call by the name that he wants to be called. But what can you tell me to help them?
Well, they're setting up an artificial requirement, Anne, by saying Jesus never said anything about this, therefore it's okay. That's a leap of logic. That's a non sequitur. It's actually a logical fallacy. It's a non sequitur. It doesn't logically follow that because Jesus didn't say anything about X, therefore X is okay. In the same way that Jesus didn't say anything about incinerating cities with nuclear bombs, so it would be using the same kind of illogic to say, well, Jesus never said anything about nuclear warfare, therefore it must be okay. It doesn't logically follow. So I would point that out just to say there actually are some things Jesus did say, and we'll get to that in a minute. But even if he didn't say anything about it per se, it doesn't mean that you therefore with impunity can just do what you want simply because you don't see a passage in the Bible. The Bible itself doesn't make that claim. The Bible itself nowhere says that you have to prove every point of doctrine or any point of doctrine for that matter from the Bible. So it's a false assumption and therefore a false premise in their illogic. But what did Jesus say? Well, we can turn to what he said about marriage and sexuality, and that is found in Matthew chapter 19, beginning in verse 1. And here he says, from the beginning or in the beginning, God created them male and female. And this is why he says a man leaves his family and clings to his wife, and the two become one flesh. He's referring here to the sexual union. And what God has joined together, let no man put asunder, because they're no longer two, but one flesh, he says. Now, that it's not limited just to sexual union, but that's definitely a big part of what he's referring to here. So he identifies God's paradigm for human marriage as male and female. So first of all, he identifies the binary as this is God's creation. Human beings are created. Human beings are expressed, if we can use that terminology, in two modes, and that would be male and female. He also says that this is God's paradigm for marriage, a man and a woman. Not two men, not two women, not a man who thinks he's a woman, a man and a woman. And he establishes here also the paradigm for human sexuality, which is that the man and the woman, because they are complementary to each other, they have the capability of joining and becoming one flesh. And the result, of course, is offspring. Although he doesn't refer to offspring there, it's inferred that the natural ordering of the sexes is toward procreation. So here in the first six verses of Matthew's gospel, Jesus gives us a complete paradigm of human sexuality, first the binary, human sexuality, and marriage. So he definitely did talk about it, but he didn't need to go through a laundry list of like aberrations of this. Jesus didn't need to say, and this, by the way, means that you can't have two men and one woman, or one man and five women, or five dudes and a chicken, or he didn't need to go through all the other permutations that one could come up with that would be contrary to this. He didn't need to say it's between a man and a woman, not a man who thinks he's a woman and another man, or a man who thinks he's a woman and another woman. He didn't have to do all that. Because by saying what he said, he excluded all other options. And that is perhaps the easiest and most compact way to explain it. So I would try that. I would talk about that. I would also show how Jesus says, you will know the truth and the truth will set you free. And part of the truth that God wants you to know is who you are in light of God himself. God created you because he loves you, and he created you as you. You didn't create yourself. God created you. And he from all eternity knew the idea of you, and he brought you into existence because he loves you and he wants you to know and love him. And if you go down a road that on one hand seeks to wrest control away from God and say, I'm going to make myself what I want to be, I'm not going to accept what you want me to be, Lord. I'm going to make myself into my own image the way I want to be, how I want to be. And that might change tomorrow if I'm gender fluid. And on the other hand, a person who goes down that road insisting on being the arbiter of his own identity, in fact, loses his own identity in this whirlwind, in this house of mirrors of what his impulses and feelings and appetites are prodding him and urging him to do. He will lose himself in the middle of this whirlwind. And that's what a terrible thing to have happen. So God, Jesus is saying, you will know the truth and the truth will set you free. So you can be free from all this stuff. You can be free from this ideology, free from these fears and the way in which you might feel dissociated from your biological sex, or in the way in which you feel as though you're living a lie. Ask the Lord to show you the truth. And he says the truth will set you free. You can become free from the slavery to this ideology, free from the slavery to the negative peer pressure from the people in this movement and others, God help them, who are prodding and pushing people to go down that road. You can be free from all that. But the only way you can be free from it, Jesus says, is if you know the truth and you're willing to acknowledge the truth and then live in the truth. And then you'll be set free. So these are all things I would suggest, Anne, if you're having a conversation with them. Lastly, by way of resources, get a hold of the book called Irreversible Damage by Abigail Schreier. Irreversible Damage, How the Transgender Craze is Destroying Our Daughters. And get another book by Dr. Ryan Anderson called When Harry Became Sally. It's an analysis of the transgender movement, where it came from, where it's going, and what you can do about it. Thank you. I'll be right back.